It's time to bring in our man Bill Shanks, 93.1 FM in Macon, 99.5 FM in Warner Robins, also Macon.com and the Macon Telegraph. Hey, Bill, good morning.
Good morning. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you too, sir. And, it's an exciting time of year, no question about it. Got that, and then there's a football game coming up after that that's quite intriguing. By the way, before we get into all that, all right, so since Murph didn't make this Hall of Fame cut, is that a one-time only shot, or do you go back on this modern era ballot? I'm not sure how this works. Can you enlighten us on this?
From what I've been able to tell, there'll be another vote with the same type of ballot, the modern era ballot, in 2 years. So in 2019's winter meetings for the 2020 Hall of Fame class. So he'll, I would assume, would be back on the ballot then. I don't know why they would take him off. And so hopefully he'll get another chance then.
Well, if Jack Morris is going to be in the Hall of Fame, then Dale Murphy should be in the Hall of Fame.
I agree. No, I have no problem with Jack Morris and Alan Trammell. I think they should be in the Hall of Fame. I'm a little, I guess, biased toward this era of baseball because it was the 80s, and I was a kid that was getting into the game of baseball and loved all those players. But I just don't. My big thing is Kirby Puckett, and I know I sound very anti-Minnesota Twin and perhaps even disrespectful since he's dead, but I just don't understand why Kirby Puckett's in the Hall of Fame and Dale Murphy's not. I know the batting average is different, but Puckett's career was cut short because of the eye injury, and we could say I think that Murphy's career was also cut short because of injuries, and he still had tremendous numbers and had a tremendous decade of hitting the baseball and was a two-time MVP. If he had been in any other market, any other larger market, I think he would have been in the Hall of Fame already, to be honest with you.
Talking with our man, Bill Shanks.
Bill, we were talking about this with Tommy Nobis as well. Is there, I don't want to call it an anti-Atlanta bias, in these things, but both Nobis and Murphy were on teams that weren't very good, even though both players were very good. So do you think it's more of a bias against players that didn't play for really good teams?
Probably so, Sam. I didn't see Tommy Nobis. He was a little bit before my time. But from everything people have told me that who did see him, he was just a beast of a football player and deserves the Hall of Fame recognition. So you have to say, all right, why didn't he get in? And I don't know what else you can come up with, but that he was on the Atlanta Falcons and he was on some pretty bad teams. So it's a shame that players who played at a high level like Tommy Nobis and were just not in the right market, why would you penalize them for that? You know, Dale Murphy, and I know more about the Murphy case, obviously, because he was, I watched him compared to Nobis, but there is a correlation there, no doubt. Murphy, the two-time MVP, and you would think you'd get a little bit more love because of TBS and what TBS was back then and today, when it was a huge part of American baseball. That's why I still can't get over the, and this is no offense to Bob Costas, not that he's listening this morning. No offense to you guys, but I don't think Bob Costas is a normal listening to the show. But
that'd be cool if he was.
Hey, Bob. Congratulations. But
yeah,
every time there's someone that goes in for the Ford Frick Award, I'm like, where's Ernie, Pete, and Skip? And I'm very biased toward that. I admit I'm very biased toward that. But I don't understand why those three have not been selected into the Baseball Hall of Fame. They all had years of service. Marty Brenneman is a fine announcer. He's been in the Hall of Fame for 20 years. And it's like, huh, what? Why? And Ernie, Pete, and Skip, I interviewed Pete Van Wieren about 9 months before he died in 2014, I believe it was. And I asked him about the Hall of Fame, and he said, I don't think I could go in without Ernie and Skip. In other words, he wished the three of them would go in together. And Pete was the last one left. Skip and Ernie had already died. And that was a tremendous thought for Pete to have, that all three of those guys. But if you think about the contribution they made to baseball together, the three of them on TBS in the 80s when baseball was taking off with the Superstation, that, I think it's a good thought. But why would Bob Costas get in over Ernie, Pete, and Skip? It goes back to what you asked originally, Sam, and that is that Atlanta bias that is, I think, out there to some extent, and it's unfortunate.
Well, it's kind of like, why doesn't Nick Chubb get more love nationally? Because it's Sonny Michel. Why doesn't Pete Van Wieren get more love nationally? Because it's the three-headed monster as opposed to just the one guy.
Right.
I think that's they cancel each other out, which is not an excuse, but I just think that's what's happening there with them.
There wasn't one that stood out.
Right.
It was a three-headed monster. It was. That's why I think Pete said that he was basically saying, I don't think I could go in. I think what he was saying, I don't think I could go in by myself. I think it would be very uncomfortable if they selected me and I went in individually. If the three of us went in together, it would make sense. And I think that told you even the recognition he had of how important the other two were to him and how they were a team. And it was not just it wasn't just Harry Carey with the Cubs or Ernie Harwell with the Tigers, Jack Buck with the Cardinals. It was Ernie, Pete, and Skip. And, you know, for 15 years, they were together as the full-time announced crew. I mean, Ernie obviously was with the Braves for over 35 years as an announcer, 25 of them as the everyday announcer. And Skip was there for more than 20, for 30 years. Pete was there for 30 years. So you don't have to worry about longevity. Well, and then again, I go back to the contribution they made when baseball was only in homes around the country on WTBS. And it's amazing to me that they're not recognized. I don't know whether there should be I need to at some point ask Chip about this when I see him, if there could be a motion or a movement to try to get the three of them together, if that would be possible compared to individually, because I think that's the only way they're going to get in.
Talking with Bill Shanks, as Atlanta's manager, Brian Snicker, was it a press conference yesterday? Just kind of impromptu, whatever. He kind of met with the media. Anything come out of that was newsworthy to you?
They meet with the media every year at the winter meetings.
At the winter meetings, yeah.
A little get-together. No, not particularly. I think he talked about the rotation a little bit and what he sees with the rotation right now with Teron, Fultonevich, Newcomb, Gohara, and those are the four that seem locked in. And then the fifth starter's job will be kind of up in the air. And, you know, I think with Lucas Sims and Max Fried, those are two possibilities. They also talked about the bullpen situation. They have not been in on some of these early bullpen signings, which I've been surprised a little bit about, but I think they're just taking their time here because there's a lot of relievers out there on the market. And they've got some internal options in the bullpen. They just took another one in the Rule 5 draft as we speak here. The internal options are there with Vizcaino, Jose Ramirez, AJ Minter, Dan Winkler, Sam Freeman, who was pretty good last year. You almost have to think, you know, getting rid of Jim Johnson and Ian Kroll will help more than anything because they were really bad last year. And if they can replace those guys with a couple of relievers who can be improvements, that's going to help a great deal. And so he talked about that a little bit with the bullpen and possibly having an 8-man bullpen. So that was one thing that he kind of focused on. And it will be, I think everybody's just kind of waiting for the first big move from the new GM. You know, what is he going to do?
Yeah, and if you had, where do you think I wanted to ask about Ronald Acuna and where you think he starts next year and what his, you know, what his expectations are going to be for 2018.
I would start him in AAA for about 3 weeks and then bring him up and get an extra year of service for him.
Is that a Chris Bryant situation? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. And I, that's what I would do and take a shot that would be something that you can kind of get away with. But, you know, look, this kid's the real deal, and he's got a great opportunity to be a major player for this team. And you have to think, I was actually writing a little thing last night. I hadn't completed it. But what are the things that could happen or have to happen for the Braves to go from a 72-win team to even an 81-win team, even a 9-game improvement without a major, major addition? And you have to think, first and foremost, if Ronald Acuna gets the majority of playing time in left field over Matt Kemp, regardless of how Matt Kemp gets off the lineup or off the roster, how much better will the Braves be defensively and offensively with Acuna compared to Kemp? Then you think about the fact that the three veteran starters, R.A. Dickey, Bartolo Colon, Jaime Garcia, combined for 62 starts last season, and I am reading this off my notes from last night.
There you go.
They had an ERA of 4.94. All right, so they also averaged just under 6 innings per start between the three of those in 366 innings. So with those numbers there, can those 62 starts be made by the young pitchers and there be an improvement? Can there be a better ERA than 4.94? And can there be a better or higher innings pitch per start as well? Then you have the bullpen, and as I was saying, Jim Johnson, Ian Cole, and for this article I was including Eric O'Flaherty, they had a combined ERA of 5.18 in 124 innings. Can they get a better 124 relief innings in 2018 from different pitchers? You think about those three things in itself. That could mean 9 games. I think that definitely could, and get them to a winning team. They take a 9 to 15 game improvement next year, low to mid 80s. People are going to be very happy, I think, with the next step of this ball club. So they need to add a reliever or two, but I think they've got some guys coming back that can really look. AJ Minter, that kid's going to be a stud. He's a really, really good relief pitcher, and I think he's got a chance to be really, really special. And I think Craig Kimbrell will be back anyway in 2019, so I hope they don't go spend money on a closer. But I think they can have some arms that can really be effective next year in that bullpen.
Talking with Bill Shanks, and Bill, I want to switch gears to football. And how close do you think Roquan Smith is to being able to stake a claim as Georgia's best ever defender?
Oh, wow. What a great question. Whew, boy, I tell you. I think Pollock, obviously, is the one. And when you think of Champ Bailey, you think of kind of a two-way player, which shouldn't hurt him defensively, but he was such a dynamic two-way player at Georgia. Pollock was outstanding, but Roquan, I think he's got a great shot to be thought of as one of the best defensive players in Georgia's history. They win the national championship, Sam, and he has a hand in it. It might be elementary. It might be very easy to call him the best defensive player ever in Georgia's history, because it would be easy to look back on this season and years to come and say, well, that was partly because of Roquan Smith. He's had a great year. He's a tremendous talent. He's made such a big difference on that team, on that defense. And no, I think he's got a great. I think he's going to go down as one of the best. And to me, at least, while I've been watching Georgia football, I think Pollock and Champ are the two. I mean, David, who am I missing? Anybody else in kind of our era?
No, well, Pollock is. I mean, Pollock and Herschel are Georgia's only 3-time All-Americans. So you got one on offense. You got one on defense there too.
I think Thomas Davis has to get a look at least.
Yeah, Champ is absolutely up there on the list too. Even if you want to go back, like to Bill Stanfield talking about guys that have won major awards back in the what you would call the older days too, but. Yeah, I mean, Roquan's definitely right up there. And the thing is, his legacy isn't finished yet. So I think a lot of it's going to have to do with just, where you put him into the all-time, pantheon of great Georgia defensive players, too. But I think you know, you'd have to have a little bit of a difference between maybe this generation, and I also don't want to leave out Terry Hogue too, because I think he falls right in there. Jake Scott probably is, you know, you got to throw him in there as well. Even like a Richard Seymour. There have been, you know, but I would say Roquan's right up there with them too. But, you know, if I had to rank, I would, you know, I would definitely put, you know, maybe not just in order of 1, 2, 3. I mean, Pollock's the first one that comes to mind, what he was able to do, but a Terry Hogue, a Bill Stanfield. I mean, there's been so many. I'm probably leaving out a couple right now too, but Roquan's definitely in the conversation for sure. There's no doubt about
that. He's a game changer. And, you know, Pollock was a game changer. Champ was a game changer. I mean, I don't remember much of Terry Hogue, but I think you can put Hogue in that. God knows from what we hear about what Jake Scott did in Athens. I think he was a world changer.
Yeah, Scott Warner was another one there. Scott Warner's another one. I was trying to, you know, just going into the College Football Hall of Fame. So
Yeah. And both of those guys have been coming into the Georgia Sports Hall of Fame the last couple of years. I mean, and their careers were tremendous. So I think the game changers, for you to have a player to go into that, if you want to call it the defensive game changers in Georgia history, and for Roquan Smith to join that is in itself, even if you want to shy away from ranking him 1, 2, or 3. But when he's in that kind of company, that's pretty elite. And I think you're right. I think Hogue and Scott Warner, I mean, it's so hard when you know, it's just like in your era.
It's different eras,
you've been alive.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, yeah, Stanfield, there's no doubt there's players before that Lauren could probably tell us all about and so forth that were tremendous defensive players. But while I've been watching, I think we've named them. Davis is close to being in there. I think he may be a little bit of a notch below, but still, for Roquan to be in that category, I think tells you all you need to know about how he's developed into a star player and the kind of seasons he's had. And, you know, when I watched that video, I saw it the other day when Chuck Battle was on the stage and they announced him as the Butkus Award winner. That's just huge. My God, it gave me chills to think that a Georgia football player was the Butkus Award winner, you know, and that was a big honor. And so I think that tells you everything about the kind of season he's had to win that honor.
Yeah, no question. And I would throw Jarvis Jones in there too. I know it's the thing is you feel like you're leaving people out, but I would just say in the last, you know, over the last 15 or 20 years, I think we've definitely, you know, hit the main ones, and then over the last 40 or 50 years also. I mean, but there's been so many good ones, no question about that. Well, we're 18 days away from the game. I'm ready for it. It's funny because now it's like what's better, Georgia's defense or Oklahoma's offense? Who are you taking in this game? I'm just ready to find out at this point.
Good old-fashioned matchup football, right? It's on paper. It's just so fun to think about how it's going to play out both games. I mean, my God, I hope college football fans, I hope we're treated to two great football games. I think we will be. I don't think it'll be some 31-0 stuff like what happened last year with Ohio State and Clemson. I think we've got four great teams, and they've got a chance to be very good football games. And no, I can't wait. It's just I think we're all trying to be patient. But it's hard, and I actually got my rental car this morning. And I'm like, God, I got to wait 2.5 more weeks before I get my rental car. You know, but I just can't wait. It's gonna be tremendous. It's a tremendous experience, and to think of how it's happened, and it's a magical season. You know, you always hear, and again, I was 10 years old, almost 11, when Georgia won the national championship in 1980. So I have some memories of it, but not many. Not nothing like an adult memory of what I've gone through now or whatever, but you just hear about the magic that happened that season. We know what happened in Jacksonville. We know, obviously, with Herschel having to be that last piece of that puzzle. And you think about how magical this season's been, and it just kind of fits. Everything fits together. It doesn't mean that we're going to win the next two games, but it's like, well, these are the type of things that happen when you have a championship season, and it's exciting to think about. And I'm trying And this is not to try to prepare myself for a loss by any means. But I am trying to be of the mindset that this is so much gravy of what's happening. Rose Bowl, semifinal, that we should appreciate what is going to happen no matter what happens. And I think they've got a great chance to win. And then, obviously, if they have a chance to play, what a storybook finish that would be to the season for them to play in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I mean, if I'd have sat here and if you guys asked me in August, all right, Bill, what's the best case scenario for Georgia football? I couldn't have made that up to even sound stupid. You know, I couldn't have come up with these things that have happened to even you guys to say, boy, he's off his rocker. There's no way that's all going to happen. And it's happened, and that's why it's a magical season so far.
Bill, before we let you go, I wanted to get your thoughts on the Falcons. Not a super convincing game on Thursday Night Football, but the Falcons did get the win over the Saints. So just a simple yes or no, do the Falcons go at least 2-1 to make the playoffs over the next 3 weeks?
Yes.
I like it.
You're not as bullish, though, as Sam is.
I'm worried about it. I think I think they'll win Monday night. I'm not really worried about that. If they don't win Monday night, they don't deserve to go. They lose to Tampa Bay.
Monday night's scaring because there seems to be no worry. Me worry.
I'm the most scared about the Panthers game at the end of the season because I'm going ahead and thinking they're not going to win at New Orleans. So if they have to beat Carolina to make the playoffs, we've seen this story play out a few years ago, although it worked out better for the Falcons because they ended up with Vic Beasley because of it for losing that game. But still, I mean, that just conjures bad memories there to play the Panthers for a shot at the playoffs at home in Week 17.
You're right. And if it doesn't happen, if they don't win and they miss out, they're going to go back to that Miami game. They're going to maybe even go back to the Minnesota game. That was a game I didn't go to. That's the only home game this year I haven't been to. But they could have won that ball game. Carolina beat them the other day. But I think if they lose, if they are in a position where they're do or die at home against Carolina and they lose, they have no one to blame but themselves because of some really bad losses that shouldn't have happened. And that'll be a shame because the NFC, the stupid thing is, if this team, let's just say, hear about this best case scenario. The Falcons get red hot and sweep these next three games. The NFC's kind of wide open right now. So if they were to do that and be 11-5 and go in as a real hot team beating your division opponents, they would have a shot. I think they would, especially with what happened to Carson Wentz the other day. But I just wonder if they're going to be able to do that.
Bill, you're the man. Great talking to you. We will catch you again next week.
All right. Sounds good, guys. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
All right, man. Bill Shanks.